So I don't feel like there's like some major backtracking going on if we dive in into the thick of things on a number of subjects from what played out on Sunday for the Cleveland Browns and what lies ahead for this Cleveland Browns franchise. And some of that, I think, was continued and brought up in the commentary that Albert Breer brought to the table towards the tail end of Afternoon Drive, their final hour. He's always a must-listen guest here on The Fan each week. And, I mean, I have several clips that I want to play from some of the things that he said, because a lot of it is like where my head is at with things. Some of it I disagree with, but some of it is just like informative stuff that makes you wonder about the future of this team. We will get to some of those coming up. But the entire conversation that we're about to dive into here to start the show centers around one thing and one thing in particular, and it is a thing that I've said to numerous people over the last over 48 hours now since the game ended on Sunday. I've said it to my wife. I've texted it to my mother-in-law. I've texted with my dad about it. I've texted friends about it. People have reached out to me, said, what do you think about this? I was talking to my son's daycare provider about it this morning when I dropped him off at daycare. Or I guess yesterday morning, because he was home with me today. But yesterday morning, I was talking about it with our daycare person. Like, it has been an ongoing conversation the last 48 hours, both on the radio, but also among all of us around Cleveland who care about sports, talk about sports, think about sports, and those who and the company that we keep. For me, and again, maybe I end up being wrong about this, and if you want to cold takes, expose me for it or whatever, fine. But for me, that felt like it was the very last game Deshaun Watson will ever play in a Cleveland Browns uniform. I will say that today. I think that's it. I don't think you see him back out there again. And it is compounded by what transpired after the injury. Yes, I'm talking about D fans and all fans. I want to be very clear, the same way Ken Carmen was this morning. It was not, talking about it with Roddy McLeod, it was not all fans who cheered when he was down and got him on the cart and all those different things. And that much is clear. I was in the press box. It's not always clear every sound and noise that's going on out there, where they're all coming from. I did hear some. The one thing I did catch in the moment was that when he was loaded on the cart and being taken away, or when he was, I guess more so when he was being taken away on the cart, he did get the common courtesy of sort of the, you know, we can tell you're okay in terms of being on the cart, you know, applause to you for putting your body in the line and being taken to the locker room in this unfortunate situation. The same courtesy that you give to any player who is generally taken out on the cart. So I caught that. And I heard some of what transpired right before that when he was just down on the turf in pockets. And it was hard to tell if it was them cheering because DTR had taken the field, if it was because Deshaun was down. I'm sure it's a mix of both. And either way, it was inappropriate and felt cringy. But I can't give you the full story from inside the press box, so I'm not going to speak for every individual fan. I can't. But I know it wasn't everybody, and it seems like the Browns players know it wasn't everybody, but still an unfortunate circumstance. But as we think about what the future holds for Deshaun Watson, it is more than just him coming back now from another season-ending injury, and one of the most serious season-ending injuries that a football player can experience throughout their career in the form of a torn Achilles. I mean, that is one of the harder ones to come back from. Knee injuries are one thing, and those can end careers. Nick Chubb wrote that letter last week about how he wasn't sure if he'd ever play again. But I do think science has advanced enough where, and there's certain players who can just like still come back and be great. Now, Nick Chubb's doing it off of two of those injuries, and so that's a little bit different. But I think about AP, like Adrian Peterson. It used to be like an ACL injury could really derail your career. Now you come back from it, and sometimes you can still be an effective player, maybe not quite at the level you were, or maybe it takes a year to kind of get your feet back underneath you. But it's you know, I think science is advanced enough with that specific procedure that it doesn't necessarily have to be a deterrent for everybody. But an Achilles is different. I mean, an Achilles essentially ended Kobe Bryant's career in his late 30s. Aaron Rodgers certainly looks like his career is headed in the wrong direction now, later in his I guess, football lifespan because of that injury. He doesn't look like the same player this year. Deshaun has the luxury of not being as old as either of those examples that I gave you. He's 29. So maybe he can come back from this and still be some sort of player in the NFL and be an effective player in the NFL on some level. But that remains to be seen. This is a serious injury, and that's first and foremost on Deshaun's mind in terms of what the future holds for him, is coming back from that specifically, no matter which version of the procedure he decides to go through with, okay? So that's where it starts, yes. It starts with the idea that he now has to overcome another serious injury. But because of what we heard on Sunday when he was down, and because I have had ongoing conversations on these very airwaves over and over and over again, and Albert Breer did touch on this a little bit. We'll get to his comments next segment. But he did touch on this a little bit. Why it didn't work here for Deshaun to this point and likely never will work here is because I think mentally there's been a roadblock ever since he arrived. And we can theorize what that roadblock is. I think it's a number of things. I think in Houston, he was the Pied Piper. I mean, they built that franchise around him, signed into a massive contract expecting, well, this is the guy that we're going to have here for years to come. The future, the face of the franchise, we're giving you the keys to the team, and we're going to build around you. That is what it seemed like at the time. He had gotten the big contract. He was, you know, giving game checks to the cafeteria workers in the facility. He was doing press conferences where he'd explain to people what a two-high shell is or what coverages were. And we know he's football smart. I've never denied that. But he went from being this larger-than-life, adored figure to being public enemy number one around the NFL, but also in some ways, like, here in Cleveland. I mean, there are swaths of this fan base that swore off the team and swore off him the second he got here and didn't give him a chance because they didn't like what he was accused of. And we may never know all the true information or what happened or what didn't happen, which one, like, what are these cases, if any of them actually were real, what wasn't, whatever. Like, we'll never know all the details of everything he was accused of. We'll never get it all. We'll hear his side of the story maybe one day. But will people believe him at that point? Probably not. Like, it's a big game of he said, she said. And the NFL seemed to find enough evidence to believe that he was guilty of some of those things or a portion of those things or whatever. And that's all fine and good, but the NFL is not a court of law. So I understand, though, like, he's had to wear that thing like a scarlet letter. He will for the rest of his life. He will for the rest of his career in football, however long that is. But it started with that. And then I've said it a million times. Some people just don't wear the villain hat well. Some people just can't live in that world. Some people embrace it. You know, you think about some of the great, like, villainous sports figures of all time, and it's like they loved living in this Joker-like world of chaos. Like, they thrived in that environment where it was like, I just love creating havoc. I don't care what people say about me. And those are the ones who, like, they really don't care what people say about them. It's easy for somebody to go to the podium, Deshaun included, and say, I don't care what people say. I'm not paying attention to it. It's another thing to actually be blocking it out and almost use that as, like, part of a source of motivation for you. I just don't think that's Deshaun. I don't think he's cut from that cloth. I don't. And I never have. And so I think it starts there. And then it because of what's being said about him on the outside and all the people who have doubted him ever since he arrived in Cleveland, then there's the self-doubt that starts to creep in. And then there's this idea that, like, everything is working against you so that the organization just keeps changing everything for you. I get it, man. Like, they've tried to make it work to the best of their ability. But if he's just not there mentally, there's nothing you can do. And I would maintain that when you made this trade, you should have known, you should have thought about that being a factor. You should have known that there was always going to be sort of this aura with this and this mental hurdle for him to overcome because of the bad PR that came with it. And I think that has impacted him severely. And so now you throw in the context of what happened on Sunday, where he's down in the field and he maybe doesn't hear it himself, because I'm sure in his mind, like, the adrenaline's pumping. He's just focused on, like, I can't believe this is happening to me again. But he heard what his teammates said, I'm sure. And it's not like his teammates haven't made him aware of it. And I'm sure on some level he heard what was going on, or people have told him what was going on. And you mean to tell me that a guy that was already, from my perspective, emotionally, what's the right word? Emotionally held back and emotionally sort of, you know, just not himself. Now you think that that guy is going to show up next year and play in front of a fan base that at his lowest of lows gave him that response and that reaction. And I'm not even saying, like, if you were asking Deshaun this question, he would probably give you the answer of, it's not about the fans, it's about the guys in that locker room, and I play for them. He would probably give you that response. That's my guess, is that he would say something along the lines of, you know, I play for the guys in that room, and to be the best quarterback I can be for this organization. But I also think in that answer, which he has given before this situation, draped in that answer is the idea that, like, what we've known about it from the start. He was a hired gun who came here, and the organization told him, we believe in you, we're going to pay you, and that nothing else, like, this wasn't about anything else for him. But now, like, the idea of him going back out there and playing in front of a fan base that gave him that reaction in that moment, I don't know how you do it. How could you possibly have any sort of, when he gets through all this, when he comes out on the other side of whichever surgery he decides to have, and then he's rehabbing and all that, in what world will he want to step back out on that field and play in front of the fans that clearly showed, and I'm not, again, I know it's not everybody, but those who did showed that he is, you know, at his worst moment, he's not even appreciated whatsoever here. It's just not going to happen. There, like, you want to talk about things there's no coming back from. There is no coming back from that. None. I don't know how, as an organization, they can put him out there. Like, and that's the other part of this. Like, the organization knew when they made this trade the bad PR that was going to come with it. But they sold it to the fans. It's like, well, if he's out there winning and he's the franchise quarterback, we believe he is, it's all going to be good. How can you sell that to anybody at this point when he's coming off of another serious injury? And you heard what they did to the guy on Sunday when he's laying on the field injured, wondering if his career might, if he might ever play football again. Like, there's no, this is the lowest point of his career by far. From a football standpoint, I understand you could say the lowest point of his career is everything he got caught up in 2020 and 2021, and that'd be fair. But from a football standpoint, like an on-the-field standpoint, there's never been anything lower. And I'm not trying to make excuses for him or make him out to be some victim here. I'm just saying, how do you come back from that? Put on that uniform and go stand out there on that field and put your body on the line again for a fan base that, at least some of the fan base, showed you how they felt about you at your lowest moment. I don't think you can. I think the organization knows that, even though Kevin Stefanski gave the, you know, very political answer of, I'm not thinking about that. I'm just thinking about Deshaun recovering, and he went through a very serious injury. We're not worried about what his future holds here, like with us, whatever. Okay, you know, I understand why he's saying that, and that's all fair. Like, it was less than 24 hours after he had gone through the injury or suffered the injury, so I get it. But you can't tell me behind closed doors they're not sitting there like, yeah, if we put him back out there, it's a disaster. The fan base, I keep saying the fan base, portions of the fan base booed him when he was injured with a season-ending injury, maybe a career-ending injury. And you think that you can somehow salvage this and sell that back to them, and that he's going to recoup some version of the self, the person that he was in Houston? I don't think so. I'll tell you why this actually becomes a convenient excuse for the team to move on from him. But also, guys, this then expounds further into the conversation that I'm really fired up about from today, which is just the idea that we are being way too flippant about where the Browns go from here, and more so way too flippant about the concept of just tearing it all down to the studs. I've heard way too many people suggest that in recent days, and it couldn't be more wrong. I'll talk about it next. I'll get to your calls, 216-474-92. We'll play some of this Albert Breer audio as well. Keep it locked. It's Spencer German with you, in for JP tonight, 92 through the Fan. I want to play this first clip from Albert Breer, because this was him talking about why it didn't work here with Deshaun, and I think he's spot on with this. It's a lot of the same thoughts and feelings that I expressed in the first segment.
I think Deshaun Watson came in here empowered by the contract and a little bit of a broken person. Because look, obviously, like, what he was accused of is awful, and, you know, to what degree he's guilty of that, I don't think very many people know for sure. Regardless of what you think about that, I do think to some degree he was really messed up by everything. And so, like, he comes in, I think, messed up. I don't think, like, he was in the right frame of mind to be the football player that he was before, now looking back on it in retrospect. And I think one of the things that led him to having great success in Houston was how tough the coaches were on him there. And it was a tough love where they were able to establish respect with him, and establish trust with him. And that's not what the Browns have done or have gotten. You know, I think in addition to maybe not having people who are as tough on him, and maybe because, like, he is being seen as being a little more fragile, he's not making the progress he was when he was in Houston. And then you see, like, some other things they do, like not bringing Joe Flacco back and firing Alex Van Pelt. And it's like, I mean, the message that's getting sent to him is, well, this isn't your fault. We're going to fix everything around you.
I think that is so well said by Albert. And like you said, well, he didn't hear that in the beginning of the clip, but before that clip even starts, he mentioned in the interview, this is based off of some things that I know and some speculation. And that's not the first time he said the nugget there about how the people in Houston, they really learned about his process and, you know, what worked for him in college. And so that's why they had that tough love sort of relationship with him in Houston. And that seemed to pull the best out of him. But here, he's been basically empowered to just, like, hey, we're going to – not even want to say empowered. He's been babied in a way to, like, understanding, hey, it's all about you, and we're going to make it all about you, and there's going to be no competition. And I think that speaks to the team understanding on some level. The point that Albert made at the start of that clip, that he was emotionally broken when he got here, and that's the problem. I think from the start it's been that way, and I don't know how you put a quarterback that's emotionally broken and now heard what happened on Sunday back out there on the field for this organization at any point. And now, I'm going to get to your calls here in just a second, but the next phase of this conversation now divulges into, if Deshaun's emotionally broken, if this experiment is officially over, and I'm saying it's over as of Sunday, I just don't see how you come back from this. Where do the Browns go from here? What phase are they in? There was another clip from Albert, which I'll play. I'm not playing it yet because I want to get to your calls. But there's another clip from Albert where Nick asked him, are the Browns in a retooling stage, a rebuilding stage, or a contending stage? I forget what the other words were, but he asked him this question. We'll play his answer coming up. But that is the next phase of this, because if it's really done with Deshaun and you can't go, like, you've reached an impasse, there's no further down this road you can go, the Browns have to decide what point they're at and where they are and what direction they need to go in, because all I hear now is Browns fans throwing out the, well, it's not the R word because retool is also an R word, but the rebuilding word, and all I can think of is you couldn't be more wrong. I'll explain why coming up, but I want to get to some of your guys' thoughts on this subject. Richie and Cleveland, you're up first in the Fan. What's up, Richie?
Good evening, Spencer. Thank you for taking my call. You're spot on. And just a couple things I'd like to add. You know, whether he suits up again or not, this is going to end up fizzling out. And, by the time it's all said and done, it's going to hurt us for the better part of a decade. You know, I remember when Minnesota gave up all those draft picks to get Herschel Walker. I remember when Ditka was coaching the Saints and he gave up that whole draft to get Ricky Williams. The moral of the story is it's never worth giving up the farm for one guy. Because if this guy that you're getting doesn't turn out to be the ultimate superstar to justify the cost that you gave up for, it's just not worth it. You know, it's just too high of a risk. And they're just going to have to try and move on. I don't see them really be able to do too much. If I was a top college quarterback prospect, I would not want to come to Cleveland and have my career destroyed. If I was Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward, I would ask for parole from Cleveland Browns football prison and ask to be traded to a contending team. There's no glory in spending your whole life on a failing team, you know. And I really don't see a better tomorrow for the Browns. I've been waiting for a Super Bowl championship since 1967. If we ain't been there by now, I really don't think we're ever going to get there. The team has lost too long. It's reached critical mass. We have to overpay to get guys here because guys don't want to come here. Look at the amount we had to overpay.
So, Rich, I appreciate the call, man. I think a lot of that is well said. But the one thing I want to push back on you with is this idea that, like, previous history dictates anything that happens in the future. I understand why fans feel that way. And I understand why there's the franchise has given you plenty of reasons to be discouraged by by this team ever having a chance to win a Super Bowl. I get all that. But, like, just because they've been that way, like, the problem I have with that statement is, like, they were out of it. They proved that they were turning the corner. They did the whole rebuild thing, got to a point where they were in the playoffs, winning playoff games. They got back to the playoffs last year. Like, they had built this thing to where it needed to go. And it's just really like one or two key decisions along the way that have basically derailed it now. So I push back on that. Where I do agree with you, though, is like the idea that, yes, this is going to probably set them back. And it's hard to, you know, go all in like that on one player if it's not going to work out. And clearly the Browns made a bad choice. But I can't sit here and be like, you know, it's always going to be this way. And I get that we think that way because we're fans, but it doesn't have to be. And the Browns are showing you it doesn't always have to be. But here we are, and they're in the same place they have been for all those previous decades. Alfonso in New York. What's up, Alfonso?
Hey, Spencer. How are you doing, man?
I'm all right. How about you? What's up?
You know, it could be better. Listen, Spencer, they got to get out of it. They cannot go to another offseason where it's like, all right, we got to build around a quarterback, you know, who's, I mean, no disrespect to Deshaun. I like Deshaun. I liked him when he was in Clemson. Who a guy who stunk up the joint, basically, to an offense where you're like, we were 10th in offense last year. You know what? Screw AVP. Screw Brian Callahan, screw Stump Mitchell. We're going to bring in a new offensive coordinator who just got fired 2 months before we even hired him back to Buffalo, where Buffalo fans here up in Rochester were saying, listen, Ken Dorsey sucks. And I didn't want to listen to him when they said, listen, you know, don't get your hopes up about Ken Dorsey. And I'm like, maybe Ken Dorsey might do something. No, he sucks. I don't even know what he does. This offense is terrible. And now Deshaun's gone. So you can't go back to this. You can't.
No. Yeah.
Have to draft the quarterback. Have to. And if you don't, because that, Spencer, that would be some Brown thing to do, not to draft a quarterback in the draft. That would be some Brown thing.
Yeah, you're all right about that. I appreciate the call, Alfonso. It would be very Brownsian of them to not draft a quarterback and try to sell everybody on the idea that Deshaun is going to be okay. But, like, I mean, I agree with a lot of what Alfonso said. I that's kind of where my head's at with this thing. And it's also part of the reason why I don't think you have to strip it down to the studs, which I do want to get to coming up. BP and Pepper Pike, you're up next. What's up, BP?
Hey, Spencer. How you doing?
Pretty good. What's up?
You know, it's just hard to believe where we're at here. You know, last year this was a playoff team. And, you know, ever since 2018, you know, when Baker Mayfield was here, you know, we've been a pretty good team. But now, you know, we're one of the worst teams in the NFL. In my opinion, when you look back at, like, Paul DePodesta's bio, you know, he's been here since January of 2016. So he's been part of, you know, 1-15, 0-16. I think he's got to go. I just had enough of this Paul DePodesta. I think he's the main decision maker here. I think Andrew Berry is just kind of in the middle. And I just think DePodesta's got to go. And I would like to see a guy like Bill Belichick come back here, or John Dorsey, or some football guy. I think this DePodesta thing's just got to go. I mean, he was part of the Odell Beckham Jr. experiment, the Deshaun Watson experiment. The draft picks have been terrible. I mean, look at the drafts. They've got, I mean, I don't even want to go over all the wide receivers that have failed here. Yeah. I think DTR is just an average prospect. I think DTR is too light to play in the NFL. The other game, he was up in the air about 7 feet in the air. I mean, he is just airborne. I mean, he is not ready for prime time.
I got you, BP.
Also, the Browns, for not having Jameis Winston as the number two quarterback, was almost like, it's almost like negligible. It's negligence. Like, there's no, Winston has to start this Sunday. I'm going to the game. I think the fans are ready to revolt. This is disturbing. You know, go from a playoff team to one.
Sorry, oh, my bad, BP. I didn't mean to cut you. I was trying to let you finish at least that last thought there. I apologize. No, I've said this already. I know there's been some reasons to be low on this team over the years. I don't know if I've ever felt the fan base lower than what it is right now. I mean, it is just, it's a despondent group, and I understand a lot of the reasons why. But The Paul DePodesta thing is interesting. It always will be interesting because nobody really knows what he does. And when you work in the shadows like that, people are going to speculate on whether or not you're pulling the strings and what reasons, you know, if the problems are your fault and all these different things. There's a lot to unpack there. And I don't know that we'll ever know everything Paul DePodesta does. But I'll tell you this. We are being way too flippant about the idea that because the Deshaun experience is likely over, that you just tear it on down to the studs and rebuild it again. I'll explain why I'm so passionate about this when we get back. We'll try to get some more of your calls as well. We got Daryl at 8 o'clock. It's Spencer Sherman with you here on 92 Through the Fan. So there's two roads here. There's a fork in the road here. Again, with the understanding from what I said to start the show that I think Deshaun's time here in Cleveland, or not, maybe not his time here in Cleveland, because that contract's tough to move, and I understand all that. But he's played his last game for this team. That is wholeheartedly what I believe. And because of that, yeah, you got to figure out what the path forward is here. But I'll say this. I've heard way too much over the last couple weeks, and I think the fan base is being way too flippant about the idea of, well, it didn't work with Deshaun. The contract is immovable. So I guess we just gotta start all over. Just trade everybody. Fire sale come November 5th. Get everybody out of here. Ship off Myles Garrett. I heard Nick and JP arguing about Myles Garrett. I heard JP asking out loud, do we even know that Myles Garrett wants to be here? Did you not listen to the press conference last week? The guy said he hopes he doesn't get traded. Like, he wants to be part of the solution, not the problem here. He has always said that. Unless Sunday changed the perspective completely, where he's like, well, now I just can't with this fan base. They're booing guys who are hurt on the field. And he gave you his spiel after the game on Sunday. He has always said, and he said it just 5 days ago, that he doesn't want to go anywhere. He wants to be here. But everybody and their mother just keeps bringing up the idea of like, oh, well, they should trade Myles Garrett. Get him out of here. Might as well start all over. Do you guys not realize where this whole, like, where we came from? 2016-17, I don't ever want to go back to that. I know I said this is probably rock bottom, like this is the lowest of lows, and you have a very lethargic and disinterested fan base right now, like maybe more than ever, because the team isn't likable, and they stink. And everyone keeps comparing, like, back in 2016-17, there was at least likable guys in the roster. Now you don't have that anymore. And so this really is the worst case scenario. So I understand why maybe that's where your mind goes to. But we can't go back to that. And also, look where that got you. Look where that got you. You were trending in the right direction. And then one, I guess we can assume, we'll put it on Andrew Berry's plate because He's the GM, but we know there might be other powers in play here. But one GM comes in and decides they want to trade for the next Deshaun Watson, and it all goes up in flames again. Like, that's all it takes. It takes one bad decision to ruin the entire thing, this entire rebuild process that you went through. We see in this league all the time that you don't have to strip it down to nothing and rebuild it entirely. The Texans drafted the right quarterback and went from a terrible team whose coach and GM, or I guess whose GM really was on the hot seat, to now being a perennial Super Bowl contender now all of a sudden this year. And yeah, maybe if you try to retool in this era while you're the Deshaun contract is still in the books, maybe that prevents you, if you draft the right quarterback, from being able to add those pieces and parts the first couple years around to, because you won't have the finances to do it. I can live with that for a couple years if it means that you come out of this on the other side and you didn't completely strip it down to the studs to get again. We can't just go to this every time we're frustrated about the way things are and the state of the team. But we do it every time. Every single time we say, let's just start all over and do it all over again. No, you don't have to do that in this league. I understand that the Deshaun situation is bleak. I understand that contract isn't going anywhere. Even though I'm saying it's his last game in a Browns uniform, my solution on it is you draft a quarterback, you bring him in, he's your starter, you start pivoting towards that guy, and then from there, Deshaun maybe does what he did the last year in Houston, you pay him just not to be in the building. Or yeah, I guess you do cut him, you spread the money out over a couple different years, and you just bite the bullet and you move on. That's what you're gonna have to do. But you mean to tell me, like, you don't think Andrew Berry, who is every year restructuring contracts and kicking money down the line, like, you don't think he can find a way to manipulate contracts enough to, like, figure this thing out and get through this? I understand that the Deshaun contract is unlike any other, and it's an albatross that's going to weigh down the cap right now. I 100% get all those things. But, like, they'll find some way around it, because they always do. And guess what? The cap also always goes up in every single year. So, yeah, like, I just hate that the mentality that we go to. Like, we gotta stop with the just blow it up mentality. Every time something's not right, just blow it up. Just blow it up. Just blow it up. We wanna blow up everything. Like, what? I don't understand why that's the thing that we jump to when things aren't going right. But you don't have to do that. Well, I am not trading Myles Garrett in the prime of his career off of a Defensive Player of the Year award just because the Deshaun thing didn't work out. Also, all I heard all offseason for months was that if Deshaun was just an okay quarterback, if he was just a game manager, that this defense was good enough that you could go make a run to the Super Bowl. That's what you guys were saying to me. So if this defense is good enough, and I think they played a damn good game on Sunday, by the way, that gets lost in all the other BS that's going on around this team, but I thought they played a great game on Sunday, and if you think the defense is good enough, anchored by Myles Garrett, why are you trading him? Why are you trading every single player if you can just try to, again, it's not easy, but you find a way around it, you draft a quarterback, that's about the only quarterback you can afford at this point, is a guy in a rookie deal. And then you retool some other places. Yes, they're going to have to address the offensive line. See what you can do there. Manipulate some contracts there. Get some other guys in here. Refix that group. And then maybe you're off and running with this great new franchise quarterback, this great new hope for the franchise. And that's the thing that they need. They need to sell a quarterback to this fan base, because clearly when they're booing the guy when he's injured on the ground with a season-ending injury, they don't believe in this guy, and that hope is gone. There is no more hope for Deshaun Watson with this group. Like, it's not that difficult. It's difficult. I take that back. It's difficult from a standpoint of this is an unprecedented situation with an unprecedented contract. But it's not impossible. And that's my point. So, no, I'm not trading Myles Garrett just because, for the heck of it, we might as well just start all over. This isn't Madden, guys. You really want to go back to 2016, 2017, and then hope that all the right decisions are made this time, that your team comes out of that okay, and now you're suddenly a Super Bowl contender. We thought that was going to happen. Now look where we are. What did that get you? Nothing. It didn't get you nothing. It got you to the playoffs. It got you a win. Got you to the playoffs a second time, and then that's it. You were supposed to come out of that as a Super Bowl contender because you had so much talent on your team. Didn't happen. So there's no guarantee that fixes everything either. But everyone just leans onto this idea of just, blow it up. Everything stinks. Go ahead, blow it all up. Start all over again. I'm not doing that. I'm just not. You never will get me to sign up for that in a league where we see teams go from worst to first all the damn time. I can't go there with you. If that's your mentality, I can't do it. I refuse to do it. So, no, Miles is here. He has said he wants to be here. Unless that changed on Sunday, he said on Friday he hopes he doesn't go anywhere. He's invested in this community. He's invested in one of the franchises in town. He's done a lot of good things. And he clearly is one of these gets Cleveland guys. Like, there's no reason to trade him other than those of you who just want to blow it up for the heck of blowing it up. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Just because this year's going poorly and the Deshaun experience failed doesn't mean you have to start all over again and hit that reset button. I mean, my goodness. But it's just I feel like this is a constant thing in this town sometimes, is that when things don't go right, that's just what you do. It's always just start all over again because we're so used to being at the... I guess it's because we're so used to being in that state of perpetual losing and starting all over that we just kind of accept it. And we're like, yeah, let's just go back to that. But no, I'm not going there. It's ridiculous. Jeff and Eastlake, you're up next on The Fan.
Hey, how's it going, Spencer?
All right, man, what's up?
Yeah. Oh, not too much. Anyway, you're pretty much right on everything, I think. So, from what I've seen, when you brought Deshaun in here, I mean, there was a lot of people for it. I listened to international people. Oh, Cleveland's going to win a Super Bowl. You know, he was proven and everything else. And then what happens? A disappointment. So, do you get rid of Myles Garrett? I don't think so. Nick Chubb? Nope. I don't think so. Fan favorite. But one thing you've been talking about is getting talent. So that's where the GM comes in. Our GM right now hasn't brought in that much talent. I don't know how many of his draft picks are number one. And another thing, I'm going to forget his name, but I know last name's Dorsey, so I'll just use that. But at any rate,
talking about John Dorsey.
John Dorsey, the guy that was a GM.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So anyway, he brought in some talent, and the team was looking good. But what happened the next year? We took two steps back or three steps back after taking a step forward, and the same thing after this year. You know, fans are fed up with that. They don't want to start all over.
Yeah.
You know, they want to see a winning product.
I don't know, Jeff, because all I hear, I appreciate the comment. We're up against it. I don't know, man. Like, all I've heard the last couple of days is that it's time to just start all over and trade Miles and trade this guy and trade that guy and trade everybody. And I am not going there with you because this defense and there's other players on this team that you can somehow find a way to build around and still be like, I want these guys here when you come out of the other side of this. I do. And it doesn't always have to just be tear back down to the studs and try to fix it that way. But for some reason, that's what we always go to. And I don't understand why. Jeffrey and Chesterland, Greg and Kent, I want to get to you guys. I do have Daryl Ryder joining us next segment. So if you're willing to hold, I will get to you because there's a lot of good commentary on this. A lot of people who want to get in, and I appreciate that. But we do have our Browns beat reporter, Daryl Ryder, set to join us next. We'll pick his brain on all these things we just discussed when we get back here on Overtime with Jonathan Peterlin.